Welcome to the Analytics of Dynasty Daily Podcast. I'm your host, Jordan McNamara. We're diving into the Denver Broncos coaching change here. And I got some more stuff, too, because we have a Russell Wilson trade as well. So I waited to do Denver a little bit later in the cycle just because I thought that there was a decent chance we got some quarterback news, could get some coverage of that. We do. So good timing there. Good luck on us in terms of how that happened. Some interesting stuff. I don't think there's going to be huge differences. I got some Russell Wilson stuff that I think is significant. So we'll see here. We'll go through this all. But Denver last year ranked 27th in plays per game, 59.7, 24th in terms of dropbacks per game at 35.5, 12th in terms of design runs, 24.2. Design pass rate was 56.2%. That is 25th. Lots of free agents in terms of Bridgewater gone, Melvin Gordon, right? You've got some change going on there. We'll see how this all unfolds. They're not going to have first round picks. So for 2 years, which is a surprisingly short amount of time. But yeah, so I mean, that is for an elite return at quarterback, but that's a story for another day. Out Vic Fangio, out Pat Shurmur, in Nathaniel Hackett. His route to this place is very interesting. 2006, 2007, he was quality control coach in Tampa. 2008 and 2009, quality control coach with Buffalo. Ends up in Syracuse with Doug Marrone for 3 years, including 2 years as the OC in 2011 to 2012. Doug Marrone then gets hired by the Bills. Nathaniel Hackett becomes the head coach of the Bills, and excuse me, he becomes the offensive coordinator of the Bills 2013-2014. There is the change in ownership there, which gives him the ability to opt basically out of his contract. He decides to do so, and then it goes from Buffalo to Jacksonville. Nathaniel Hackett goes with him. At first as quarterback coach, then as OC. That's 2015 through 2018. Remember, he is part of that staff that actually gets Jacksonville to the door of the Super Bowl. And then they decided to not, call pass plays. And they decided to basically give the game back to Brady and lose it volitionally in my opinion. I think it was one of the most cowardice coaching performances in NFL history, that performance. So he doesn't escape that well, and then ultimately Jacksonville goes off the rails. I think a lot of that's probably more Doug Marrone than it is Hackett. Doug Marrone's notoriously not likable, which is part of the reason why I think it's his cowardice in that Jacksonville performance against the Patriots is so wild. So that's basically the stint. He leaves Jacksonville after they get canned at the end of 2018, ends up for 3 years with Green Bay, and is the offensive coordinator. So some he leads an offensive team that ends up producing back-to-back MVPs. So an interesting route there all the way through. I think he's pretty neutral in terms of the tendencies. Only twice is he ranked in the top 10 in terms of passing yards. It was the past two seasons, 2020 and 2021. In 2020, he was ninth in the league, or Green Bay was ninth in the league. 2021, they were eighth in the league. So top 10, but not that high. Otherwise, very much middle of the pack. Passing attempts ranked between 13th and 24th in 7 out of 8 seasons as an offensive coordinator. The other season was 4th, and that was a season in Jacksonville. So again, I would say it's pretty middle of the road. It's not anything extreme. And for reasons that we'll get to in a minute, I think that's interesting. Twice he's led the league in rushing attempts. That was 2013 and 2017, Buffalo and Jacksonville. But otherwise, between 12th and 24th. Really a a pretty, like, if you were to just shoot at the middle, there's a good chance you're going to get real close to Nathaniel Hackett in terms of a lot of tendency stuff. So, again, I don't think that that's necessarily bad. We do see them come up in terms of some of the stuff, though, right? Being middle of the pack in terms of, in terms of pass rate, that's up a couple percentage points, right? In terms of plays per game, that's up a little bit. In terms of dropbacks per game, right? That's up a little bit. You just keep kind of adding those things up, and you're like, okay, well, there is maybe a little bit more fertile ground here. There's some efficiency stuff too, some minor efficiency stuff. Green Bay was 15th in terms of points, in terms of plays per game at 61.8. That's up a couple of plays per game. They were 16th in terms of dropbacks per game. That is up more than 2.5 dropbacks per game. So that's, definitely an improvement. 13th in terms of attempts per game. 17th in terms of designed pass rate. Again, so up a little bit, just kind of across the board in terms of all the stuff. They did run more play action, a couple percentage points more in play action than Denver did last year. I think when you start taking out some of these things and you sort of look like, how might this offense look different? Judy ran 253 routes last year. Patrick ran 497 and Sutton 542. Judy was out. He missed a bunch of games. He missed about half the season. But his market share targets 20.2 last year. Patrick, and this was prorated for the games that he played, 18% for Patrick and 19.9% for Sutton. So really, between the three of them, it's about a 60% share of the offense. Market share, air yards. Judy was at 26%, so actually just over what he did in terms of market share targets. That's fine. Patrick at 24%. Sutton more the downfield guy at 34.4%. So that's kind of where they lie in terms of their overall usage. I think the stuff for Wilson's really interesting. So if you go back, PFF has this metric, and I just use Safe Leagues points just because I play Safe Leagues, and that's just how I default their scoring settings. When you go back and you look at Wilson's points going back in his career, points per dropback. So this is fantasy points per dropback. In 2021, interestingly, and I found this pretty wild, 0.61, that ranked fourth in the league. In 2020, so the year prior, it was 0.64, so actually better than last year, but he ranked eighth in the league. 2019, 0.63, ranked fourth in the league. 2018, 0.70, ranked third in the league. 2017, 0.60, third in the league. 2016, 0.45, this is the worst of his career. That was actually 18th in the league. 2015, 0.68, second in the league. 2014, 0.65, that's third in the league. And then 2013, his rookie season, 0.63, fourth in the league. So basically, outside of 2 years, 2016 and 2020, when he was actually pretty good, even better than he was last year, outside of those, he's been a top four performer. He's basically either been 2, 3, or 4 in terms of points per dropback. When you look at his dropback numbers over the course of his career, it hasn't been that high. And that's the thing that I think that's interesting with and I actually saw Matthew Berry do a pretty good job in terms of breaking it down. He's like, listen, he was my, and I think he was like a mid to late running back at quarterback one. He's like, I'm not really changing him that much. He doesn't really see a ton of difference. I don't either. Like, I don't think it's going to be this drastic difference for him, but I think it's enough that it's going to basically bump ceilings and floors in ways that you're really shooting at a good target. And this is assuming he's not declining. I do think there is a chance that he is declining. If you were to just sort of go back and look, like, this is one of the worst seasons of his career in terms of points per dropback. Now, you have to caveat that with saying, like, hey, he was fourth in the league. He was hurt. If he's fourth in the league, maybe that's actually the, and he's down, right? That's probably an indication that as a whole, the league was better at defending dropbacks than in other seasons, right? So that that's probably a more difficult, atmosphere to work in, if you will, right? It's more difficult to sort of do that. So I don't necessarily think I'm going to dock him all that much, right? I think you sort of go back and you look at this year and you think like, hey, he was hurt and had that bad finger injury and he probably rushed it back. Like if he had been out for the year, I don't think anyone would really thought much of it. But like, hey, he got traded in the offseason, like missed the year, had this like freak finger injury, but he comes back and underperforms and all of a sudden people are sort of concerned about it. We kind of know that he's good from a fantasy perspective. It's just basically about volume. And listen, you take good players and that are consistently good, and he is consistently good. And when that happens, like you just kind of hope for a volume spike. And I think the volume can go up for him. You know, when you look, he had 400 attempts last year. His career high in terms of attempts was 558. He did 516 the year before that. But more years in his career has he been below 500 than above 500. We just sort of start looking at that again. That's not a great, really conducive situation. Yet that's all he's really done is produce. So it's an interesting. I think he's really flown in the face of. He's really swam into a stream, into the current instead of down current, riding into the wind instead of riding downwind. I'll be really interested to see if they can decide to let, quote, let him cook more, if they pass more than the median, right? That's a really, really interesting situation. So in terms of all that, I think it's a I think it's a good situation. I know some of the national media is like, oh, they paid a lot. I don't think they did. Like these guys don't come on the market that often. And when they do, right. I don't know. It's just, they basically got, essentially a couple seconds more, I guess, in Fant over Stafford. Right. So I think that's interesting. Again, if you go back to the Stafford deal, I think, if you compare this to the Stafford deal, we could do a full-on thing, but just in 15 seconds here, I think it's ludicrous to think that Jared Goff was actually a contract dump and that they had to take an extra first on. Like, when you look at Stafford, when you look at Wilson, like, this is a couple firsts on top of that. Like, I don't know. It's just for trades that don't really happen, I think that's a nonsensical assumption at this point. So, So for what that's worth. That's pretty much the deal. I mean, you have Gordon walking. I think this is probably going to help. This is going to be a rising tide lifts all boats. I think Albert O makes a lot of sense, like in the teens. Again, there's not a lot of penalty to missing there would be what I would say, just as a general takeaway. Like, take a big swing at tight end. Like, it's fine. Take a swing in the teens at a tight end. And if you miss, like, the consequence of missing and being – starting a guy or having a guy in that spot that's, 20th or 25th or whatever, 30, right? The consequence of that isn't that big, right? It's a very gradual line. And if you sort of are taking an elite shot and like you can find someone that has something that sticks out in that range, I think that makes a ton of sense. Right? I think that really does make a ton of sense. So that's the... and he's good, right? I think Albert O's a pretty good player. When you look at his per route run, for example, on his career, he's at 0.48. That ranks in the 96th percentile in terms of career points per route run. Not a huge sample, but not a good quarterback either. So when you start looking at that, you're like, huh, right? That's the type of situation that you take a bet into. So. Yeah, so that'll pretty much do it for this episode. I'm glad I sort of waited because we could cover some of this. I think Albert O is the asymmetric bet. That would be my position there for you all. So until next time, continue to embrace the variance. We'll talk again very soon.